Welcome to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're concluding our deep dive into Autechre's mammoth NTS sessions by discussing the last two installments, session 3 and 4, before zooming out and reflecting on the entire four-part, eight-hour-long journey. Again, we'll spend some time on the big picture here, but the main focus of this episode is NTS sessions 3 and 4. If you want to hear us go in-depth on sessions 1 and 2, go back to the episode before this one. Next week, we'll talk NTS bonus track Sinistrail Sentinel, as well as any emails we don't manage to get to today, so you still have plenty of time to tell us what you think about the NTS sessions, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Our next proper episode, a week after that, will be on AE Live 2016/2018. These are the 7 live recordings of the 1/6 tour set, not to be confused with the 2014-2015 live recordings released as AE Live, which we've already covered. Again, our next proper episode is on AE Live 2016-2018. Hopefully that's not too confusing, and start sending us your thoughts, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Okay, Dan, we did a comprehensive rundown on all the NTS background info last episode, and listeners should go back to the first few minutes of that one if they need a refresher. But why don't you just remind us of the stuff we need to know about NTS sessions 3 and 4 specifically?
All right. Nobody knew what to expect when Autechre's month-long residency with NTS Radio started on April 5th, 2018, but by the time of NTS 3 and 4, which were originally broadcast April 19th and April 26th, it was becoming clear that we were in the middle of 8 hours of completely new material, and that each sessions would serve as one episode in a larger album-like experience. Indeed, in a 2018 interview, Sean explained, "I don't expect many people will listen to all 8 hours in one sitting, but I want it to be possible, and it's kind of a journey. There's a rough narrative where the first is more straightforward, the second is a deep plunge, the third is development of two, and the fourth is a deep future." Or in Rob's words, the first one starts out narrow and widens out, the second one explores how far we can go, third, you've got so much width now, almost anything is possible, and the fourth one, you don't know what they're doing with the gas or the atomic level stuff, or and just as important, cosmic with one another. There is gravity and heaviness. Again, this comes from a Japanese interview that's been translated back and forth, so it doesn't make perfect sense.
Yeah, and on the topic of reception, I'll just remind you that the NTS sessions were widely acclaimed, and NTS 3 and 4 are often seen as the best of the bunch. On Rate Your Music, where the whole project is rated at a 4.01 out of 5, even though the average rating of the individual releases is a 3.58, NTS 3 and 4 are tied at 3.63, making them the clear favorites over NTS 1 and 2, which are currently sitting at a 3.47 and a 3.59, respectively. So, we talked about our personal histories with the NTS sessions last time, and we should avoid repeating ourselves too much here, but I'm curious what you remember, Dan, about listening to the live streams of these last two installments. Where was your head at by the time we reached this halfway point, and what did you think of NTS 3 and 4 when you first heard them?
Yeah, I mean, by now, you know, we knew that we were getting new Autechre stuff and not just mixes or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was looking forward to them, you know, a bit more than maybe the first one. Also, by this point, we knew that we were going to get them, like, released officially, you know, a couple hours or so afterwards. So, you know, it was still fun to listen to the stream because, you know, chit-chatting with everyone like we talked about last time. But it was like a little less pressure because you knew you could listen in, you know, better quality and at your own pace, you know, later that day. But, you know, it was still a lot of fun. You know, I still did it, still skipped my nap, like I mentioned last time, and listened to them.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this more, but I feel like my memories of listening to the live stream of NTS 3 is that it really started to come together here for me. Like, I started to, you know, really appreciate that this was, like, a larger project and not just, you know, a bunch of totally separate mixes.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Again, we'll get into the reason that is, but it just started to, like, kind of come into focus. And it was around the NTS 3 live stream that I started to be like, okay, this is, like, a major statement, like, breakthrough for Autechre, one of my favorite groups already. NTS 4, you know, was, and we'll definitely talk about this, but, I mean, that was quite a doozy. It was like, you know, you're just thinking, like, are they really going to end it like this, you know, like a full hour of one kind of drony track? And, you know, to what you were just speaking about, it was sort of like a lower quality kind of stream situation. And you just felt like this is such dense, like kind of ambient type music that I don't think I'm getting very much of the details here. And maybe I'll just wait to pay close attention for when the actual thing drops. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I took once I knew we were getting, you know, like official releases of the streams, I took the streams more as just like, you know, having it on in the background.
Yeah.
And, you know, chit chat and, you know, just sort of first, you know, first thoughts kind of thing. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the stream was in like 192, which is, you know, abysmal. So, you know, it was fun. It was fun just to, I miss like the event kind of thing, with records and everything coming out, you know, at a specific time, you know, when everyone kind of listens to it at the same time. Yeah. It's a fun like communal thing. And, you know, this was definitely like, you know, one of the more fun getting to do it four times for,
yeah,
you know,
eight hours. Plus it had like grown in, you know, by the time of NTS 3 and 4, I mean, I feel like the audience size had doubled because everybody was aware, you know, by then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last time, like NTS 1, you know, people weren't sure if it was just, I think the kind of consensus was people just thought it was going to be like a mix of songs they like and stuff, you know, which I was going to put on while I was at work, right, and stuff. You know, it's interesting, but, you know, if I missed it, not the end of the world kind of thing. And I think you even said that, you know, it wasn't really, you sort of thought it was going to be that. So you weren't like, you know, waiting by your, you know, proverbial radio for it or anything. Yeah. But, you know, what by this point, you know, the word was out and I think you're right. You know, it was a much bigger deal.
Yeah. By this point, it was like the new Game of Thrones episode or something, like, at least for me. But since we're, you know, saving the big picture stuff for later, I think we should just go ahead and jump right into the specifics of NTS3. I've noticed that this session is kind of late enough into the project that a lot of descriptions I read are like in comparison and contrast to the other sessions. And while I definitely want to do that too, I wonder if we can spend a few minutes trying to talk about it on its own terms. So pretend that the other sessions don't exist. How would you describe the overall sound palette that Autechre are working with on NTS3?
Yeah, I mean, it is really difficult to not, you know, mention the other ones in doing so. But I think, you know, what the band said themselves is sort of apt. At this point, you know, it's so wide, they can almost do anything. This one is sort of like the, almost like the grab bag. You know, it's got a little bit ambient. It's got some of the, like, banger try. It's almost like a trip through Autechre history, you know, maybe always through this like later version of Autechre lens, but I think you're getting things, you know, you're getting things that sound like today's Autechre, but then you're getting like, you know, real, you know, crazy, you know, fun kind of thing, like TT1PD, I think is like, you know, just a straight like a banger of a track, but it's also like 22 minutes long and, you know, with this weird switch and stuff in the middle, which I think, you know, is more contemporary Autechre.
Yeah. And I mean, you're getting like stuff that actually I think a lot of stuff that I would describe as sort of throwbackish, like electro kind of grooves, you know, like Clustro Casual comes to mind, Splash, FLH is like a pure like Kraftwerk-y pocket calculator jam kind of a thing. You know, so, but it's really hard to describe this one overall, I think, because it does feel like much more grab baggy, like you were saying, just in the sense of like, I want to kind of describe it as this, just much, much more like digital kind of sound and like much more electro kind of a sound. And yet that doesn't really hold true for even the majority of it, because other stuff is very noisy and like, you know, tracks like TT1PD and like Lost Ceramic, you know, I found myself writing down like, you know, comparisons to brass instruments a lot, like these big explosions of like abrasive noise and stuff. And then you do kind of get into, you know, what I might describe as like kind of mechanical territory by the end, but with a very like, I don't know, just like a very like desolate kind of quality, like a slowness and a stillness to it. So do you think there is any way to kind of like sum this thing up, or would you really call it a grab bag? I mean, does it have like a consistent mood or maybe even like an approach to, you know, track development, track structure or anything like that?
I think it's sort of like has an arc. You know, I think it sort of like moves towards becoming more like ambient and stuff. You know, like Shrimple Air, you know, is like just ethereal whooshing and stuff, and you know, and that's towards the end, and then you know, Ikari is pretty you know, ambient and stuff. But I mean, then we've also got just four tracks in is Acid Wayne Idol, which is essentially just a loop going for a while. Yeah. So you know, that's maybe not necessarily 100% accurate. You know, I hate to, I feel like we're always using this like descriptor, but this is sort of like the, you know, it's got that White Album kind of deal here. Yeah. You know, it's like this massive album, even though it's, you know, only 10 tracks, but you know, it's this massive length with just sort of like shifting style. You know, it's sort of like we always talk about, especially with these sessions, like, you know, you couldn't really shuffle that. You know, it's like they put a lot of effort into the sequencing. I think this is, and once again, as always, I didn't try it, but you know, I think this is like the one that you maybe could shuffle a little bit. It seems like this is kind of obviously the middle of this like larger project, you know.
That's what I wanted to say, is like by the time you got to the third quarter of like any kind of double album or just massive project, you would kind of expect stuff like this to happen, like kind of the weirdest, like most oddball kind of left turns.
Yeah, that's where you put it.
Yeah, and you know, so we're already kind of breaking the little rule that I wanted to set up, which is okay, we could start doing that now, but like it feels like that to me. It feels like the third quarter of like a really expansive project, just in its kind of diversity of sounds, you know, and continuing this kind of transition into the comparison territory. You know, you mentioned Rob's description of NTS3 as, quote, "You've got so much width now, almost anything is possible." But I also thought it was interesting that like Sean, his only description of NTS3 is, you know, a development of two, you know? So how does NTS3, I don't know, compare and contrast with sessions 1 and 2?
Yeah, that I, you know, that's a more odd descriptor, I think, from him, because I mean, it sounds like it's like a progression from 1 and 2, I guess, in the sense that it's opened up so much that you can do anything. You know, I like the other description so much more. I don't know. You know, this is definitely like feels like, you know, third quarter in this giant thing. Whereas, you know, NTS1, you're just starting out. You don't really know what you're getting yet. You know, 2, you're sort of settling in, and then here, and 3, you've opened up, and you know, we can almost do anything. But we're still like, I think like we're very heavily like progressing to NTS4. You know, like as we move along here. But I just feel like that progression, like 3 and 4, seem much more linked in my mind than 2 and 3 or even maybe 1 and 2. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. This is something I kind of want to return to, but you know, I kind of feel like having done this experiment of like spending so much time with 1 and 2 and now moving on to 3 and 4, what I notice sort of is that like each session seems to kind of do this like hard shift up front, and it's kind of brilliant, actually. It might be like my favorite part about the NTS edge, like the smartest move here, which is like we talk about how LSEC, it kind of slowly develops like over the course of the whole thing. And we started feeling like the breaks between LSECs was a little arbitrary, because sometimes the first track on an LSEC is like clearly kind of developing the mood that the last one ended with, you know? But here, it just seems to do like this really hard reset, right? You think of like NTS2, like Elec 9, 7 hours, like how hard of a shift that is from what was going on with NTS1, which was really kind of like had like a lot of old school hip hop kind of flavor and like a really groovy flavor. And then all of a sudden we're in like totally wild, you know, experimental noise territory. And the record kind of continues this like noisiness and this abrasiveness, a lot of mechanical textures. Same thing happens with NTS3, where like Clustro Casual does this hard reset, I think, into like pure electro territory, and gives you like just this really clean digital kind of, I want to use the word glossy, and that might just be because the title of the track, Gloss Ceramic, but this kind of like glossy sheen to the thing. But then the brilliance of it is that it's that like kind of establishes a new identity for NTS3, But then as you go a little bit farther, like into TT1PD, well, then you get some of those abrasive textures calling back to NTS2. You kind of get what I mean? Like, it does this nice trick of establishing a new identity before calling back and calling forward and all that.
No, definitely. I mean, I think like FLH really sort of calls back to BQ, BQ, BQ. You know, it's got that, say, I mean, you called it like pocket calculator. You know, it's like it's a little silly. I think FLH is like a less ridiculous version of, BQ, BQ. Yeah. But, it's in that same sort of vein. But yeah, I mean, I think it's brilliant, like you said, to put FLH not on the same, you know, record as BQ, you know, and to put it, you know, so it's just in the middle of NTS3, you know, it really is like, it's established this new identity, but we're still in this, you know, same project. Whereas like LSEC, I think we determined, you know, during the episode that LSEC like works much better as a one, you know, sort of thing. It's like, I don't even like to think of it as LSEC 1-5, you know, it doesn't work as well, split up. NTS, I think it works sort of both ways. Like it's great, as one giant piece, but I mean, it is eight hours, which is, you know, difficult to sit through it all at one time. And I think like each individual NTS like holds up, you know, like if we only got one of these, they would be great. It would still be great, you know? Whereas like, if we only got one of those discs of LSEC or something, I think it would be, you know, still an okay record or whatever, but I think it would be like at least a minor disappointment here. Whereas, you know, I've clearly got my favorites in NTS and ones I like more than the others and stuff, but I would be happy with any of these, I think, as like an individual record.
Yeah, and I think it's because it like each one establishes a new identity, and then it can sort of evolve into a development of two, as Sean says, with some of the noisier, like more mechanical tracks, like even toward the end, like with Ninefly and stuff. There's a lot of that like kind of whining feedback sound that was like really, you know, common in NTS2. So, but it's brilliant because it's not just a development of two. It is sort of its own thing and then can kind of build to that. I also want to mention, you know, to your point of BQ, I think there's a lot of kind of like silly playfulness on NTS3 in a weird way. Like Splesh has kind of a goofiness to it with that like octave effect on the sort of bass lines. Acid Mon, we'll talk about more, of course, is a pretty weird one. FLH is quite goofy. And yeah, so that's like a case where in retrospect, it feels like that's kind of a core part of NTS3's identity, and BQ was a little preview. You know, makes, I think, a lot more sense by the time you get to NTS3. But last episode, you know, we talked about listener Darren's email on the looseness and the jamminess of the NTS sessions, and I wonder if you still think that holds true for NTS3. I like this email from listener Phil, who writes, "I think we all probably listen to a bunch of music that uses repetition and slow changes over time to express things, but there's something really different about NTS. I can't put my finger on what it is, but they found the sweet spot of what changes and what doesn't, such that every song feels very sure of itself and structured in its musical ideas, but every time I listen to any given song, I hear it in a different way. John Frusciante compares this effect of listening to this kind of music to watching the waves change at the beach, and I think he's right on." I mean, it strikes me as NTS3 is a much more repetitive, this isn't like strictly true, but there's a lot more emphasis on repetition than we heard on the earlier NTS sessions. But what do you think about the balance between like jamming, exploration, and just pure repetition on NTS3?
Yeah, I think NTS1 and 2 feel much more, you know, jammy than 3 here.
Yeah,
you know,
that knob twiddling, like live energy kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they felt more like AE Live or something. 3 here really sounds often like, I mean, loops or, you know, like just very slowly changing ambient sort of things. I mean, Acid Wayne Idol, it changes in like, you know, such subtle ways I think if you aren't paying close attention or something, like you might just think it doesn't change at all, you know, which I think John Frusciante, is he in the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
I know how much you like them.
I fucking hate the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but I agree with him here. It is sort of like change, like watching the waves change at the beach. You know, like if you aren't paying attention, all waves sort of look the same, you know, but if you you know, zero into it, you know, or just really paid, you know, they're all kind of, you know, the same structure, but, you know, slightly different, you know, no two are actually alike. And I feel like that's how a lot of the songs here are, you know, you're getting these repetitions, but you know, they're, none of the repetitions are 100%, you know, exactly right. The same, you know, I mean, maybe they are for a bar or two, but you know what I mean? I mean, like, Acid Wayne is the like extreme example here, but I think like GL or G1E1 is pretty
you know, like loops.
It's basically a loop. Shrimp Ripple Air is a loopy kind of thing, you know. I mean, even if Splash is you know,
but it's paradoxical though, you know, because like this is the thing I think about NTS3 is like everything I want to say to sum it all up, like there are a bunch of things that contradict it totally, because like Splash, it changes like every few bars, sort of like the
that octave thing.
Like the whole like riff kind of like just totally changes, or like, you know, other tracks like Gloss Ceramic, like totally grows and evolves into something wildly different. Ikari kind of like grows and evolves. So I want to say that in general, this is a much more repetitive session, and yet a bunch of things, you know, TT1PD is like a pure rock jam that just like builds in intensity and does make this like significant shift as it goes through. You know, a bunch of things just totally contradict that.
Well, I think it's, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I think it's that it's that like if you just have this on in the background or something, you might say, oh, all these songs are so repetitive, you know, nothing changes, you know, in 20 minutes. But it's that thing, if you focus in and you really, you know, deeply listen to the tracks, you could find all sorts of things that are changing. This is maybe my favorite NTS, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of stuff like that. You know, I enjoy like ambient music that works, like, you know, like Disintegration loops and stuff, you know, it's the same thing over and over, but then it's really not if you pay attention.
Puts you in kind of a trance, so that
exactly.
Changes are actually like kind of surprising and like exciting in a way.
Exactly.
You know, we talked about and mostly agreed with listener Colin's opinion that the NTS sessions are a much more accessible version of LSEC, sort of, or much more accessible than LSEC. And listener Joe wrote in to say that session 3 was the one that immediately clicked with me. So is NTS 3 still as accessible as NTS 1 and 2, or maybe even more so?
I think it might be more so, because I think it's a better snapshot of Ottecker because of that grab bag thing, you know. Ottecker has a lot of different styles and stuff they do, you know. There's the ambient stuff, there's the rockin' tracks, there's the you know, really repetitive thing, and you sort of get like a little bit of everything in this one. Like, honestly, if somebody, you know, wanted to get into later day Ottecker or something, I think NTS3 would maybe be a decent place to start. You know, as long as
that's true.
The problem is getting someone to, you know, start with 2 hours of music. But if they're okay with that, basically, I think that you know, 3 is a good one to do it. You know, NTS 1 and 2 are also accessible, I think, you know, individually, more so than LSEC. But I just think 3 just has enough of like a little bit of everything, and I don't know.
It's very memorable.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
You're never going to forget Acid Mon Idol the first time you hear it, I think. And like, it also has the most welcoming, friendliest opener of all the NTS sessions. Like, actually, all of the other NTS sessions start off in like kind of a challenging, like endurance test kind of a way. And Cluster Casual is just like,
yeah,
just very chill, very cool. I feel like anybody, any, you know, electronic music fan would immediately be able to dig that. You know, and then it's also more fun in some of the ways we were talking about. But on that note, listener Pokepox wrote in to say, what I like so much about session 2 is that it brings into focus the bleak and spacious environments occupying the rest of the series. In particular, session 2 really has consistent vibes of like haunted and or abandoned locations. Session 3 kind of takes a break from this, but it comes back full force in its latter half. Gloss Ceramic feels like a middle ground between the cold, distant, and haunting vibes of some session 2 tracks and the abrasive mechanical feel of others. And listener Phil wrote, despite each part having a really distinct flavor. One of my favorite things about NTS is finding weird threads that tie it together. There's a sound that first appears in Volvic, very quietly in the background. That same sound appears in Sinistral AB Air and blows through Shim Ripple Air and Ikari before developing fully as Mirage, or at least I think it does. It might be a Mirage. Good one, Autechre. There's something emotionally resonant about this spirit that's been at the edges of this entire album, culminating right before Column 13, which feels like the last push before the drift and ascent of Shim Ripple Casual and All End. Phil is obviously talking a lot of NTS 4 here, which we'll get to in a little bit, but I feel like NTS 3 is a good time to start talking about the relationships between the sessions and the threads tying it all together. So, you know, we were talking about NTS 3 as like kind of the most welcoming, friendly, you know, almost starting point if you were like a total newcomer. But also, we were talking earlier about how it kind of starts to bring into focus like the larger aims of this project, you know? So how do you hear NTS 3 playing off of or maybe developing ideas from earlier sessions? And do you feel like those threads are starting to kind of come into focus and wrap everything into a nice bow at this point?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think 3 is the point where this is obviously like one giant project split into, you know, separate parts. I think it's like, you know, 1 had its own identity, but it, you know, that's the first one you hear. So of course it's going to have its own identity. And then, you know, 2 has a different identity, but you know, it's still, is it going to mesh, you know, all together? And I think 3 with this, you know, sort of grab bag, little bit of everything, it's doing those callback kind of things, that you talked about. It's coming up with its own new ideas. It's doing, you know, kind of call forwards that, you know, we don't know about yet in NTS 4. I think 3 is the one that, you know, really makes this an obvious like package, you know, deal. As far as like, and I think that is why it makes a good entrance point to it. Like, I don't think they should have aired this one first, you know? Like, don't get me wrong.
But it's interesting, right, to think back about, like, we were talking about LSEC 1, which feels like a little bit of a sampler for what's to come. Mm-hmm. And here, it's like NTS 3 is doing that project. I mean, I can't put my finger on why, but it just feels like smarter somehow to kind of, like, put that, like, key to unlocking the whole thing a little later.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just, I think that's sort of the problem with like individual LSECs. Like they don't have like such a clear identity. I mean, even it's been like 4 weeks or whatever now since that episode, I have a hard time like looking back and recalling, you know, what's on each one, you know, just without looking. Whereas like NTS, like it doesn't feel as much like that. I mean, granted, I'm still here in the middle of it, but I think it is a better way to do it in the middle. You know, you've on such a large project, like you've let the first couple things breathe, build an identity. You know, 3 has its own identity, but it's an identity that is tied in with these other, you know, things. It's just, I think it's really smart to do it, you know, this way.
Yeah, I feel like there's just something about NTS 1 and 2 that have this real, like, I know they tried to do this with every session, but have this real like radio show kind of energy where there's quite a lot of like fun and intensity and like, you know, just building energy and almost like live in the room kind of knob twiddling energy like we were talking about. And it's session 3 that needs to sort of, you know, perform this magic trick of shifting us a little bit into NTS 4, which is going to be like much more serious, like meditative kind of territory. And so it needs to kind of like tie the whole thing together, make the whole thing make sense. It just feels like it's doing so much heavy lifting, you know, as part of this album. I wanted to read this email from listener Joe, who asked, what is the deal with the last minute of Splesh when we suddenly hear a snippet of All End? In the interviews you cited, they said that the oldest stuff on here was part of the extended jam that became Blade Aloris. Was Splesh part of that jam? Was it made using the same series of patches as Blade Aloris / All End? Or is it a separate creation and they just pasted it in to mess with people? It was one of the weirdest moments for me, and I remember reading people having similar experiences of, oh, random Blade Aloris, not having any idea what was in store for the end of session 4. You know, that's certainly a weird moment, but it kind of like, you know, supports what we're saying, where Splesh just suddenly ends with this like preview of All End, like a literal straight up preview of All End. You know, it does seem like they're really focused here on NTS 3 of like starting to preview things and starting to tie the beginning to the end, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of why that is like that. You know, part of me thinks maybe it was to make it time out, you know, because these, since they were on the radio show, you know, they're like an exact sort of time. But I mean, you could also just stretch acid idle, you know, another 20 seconds or whatever that all in sample is, you know. So I think it is like a little, you know, call forward sort of thing, because you're right, you know, listening to this live, and I think these, you know, very much are designed to be like a radio show that you heard live. So, you know, the first time you hear that, you don't have any idea that you're going to hear that, you know, coming up as this like sort of grand finale sort of thing. And then once you do get that, you're like, oh, you know, that seems familiar, or, you know, or whatever. And I think it, yeah. I don't know. I think it is just like a really tying it together, you know, sort of thread.
I really highly doubt that like Blade Allura started as Splash, you know, like,
I don't think
that it was sort of pasted on, but I feel like the idea was you kind of need like to pause to catch your breath before we launch into TT1PD. Mm-hmm. You know, because Splash is like quite rhythmic and bouncy, and you want to kind of like reset before you then kick it back up like 20 notches. And I just think it was a smart idea to be like, well, if we need like a little, you know, a little pause, then let's just do a little preview of what's to come, you know. And again, I just feel like a lot of this album is like doing that nice tying together. So the question is, and maybe we've kind of already answered it, but, you know, do you hear NTS3 as like just a transition between 2 and 4, or as its own thing? Maybe a little bit of both, you know what?
I mean, it's definitely has those transition, you know, feelings, but I mean, I don't see it just as that. Like I said, I think if all of these individual sessions, like if only one of these was released as a record, I think NTS3 would maybe be the best one as a standalone album, you know. So in that regard, you know, that's not a very transition-y, you know, sort of feeling to have. But of course, you know, with it calling back to things and calling forward, it gives it that transition. I don't know. I just feel like when you say it's transitional, like that's sort of like has a negative connotation. But
It feels transitional the way that like the Beatles' Revolver feels transitional or something career.
That's
a perfect little masterpiece, but it's still transitional.
No, yeah, that's a perfect you know, way to say it. I mean, Revolver, I think, is my favorite Beatles record, so that makes sense that, you know, NTS3 would be my Revolver, I guess, here. I just love a good black and white cover, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Hey. Well, let's talk a little bit more about flow. We know that Sean and Rob wanted the whole project to work as one big piece, but that they also want each session to feel like a self-contained radio mix, as we were saying. Last episode, we heard from a bunch of listeners who wrote in to praise the masterful sequencing throughout. So what do you make of the sequencing on NTS3 specifically? We started to allude to this, but it's kind of a weird like journey. You know, it's like when I'm listening to TT1PD, I'm like feeling like, are they sure they meant to put this on NTS3? You know, like there are a bunch of like really weird left turns, but do you think it has like a build and a, you know, resolution kind of a flow?
It definitely is the kind of weirdest sequenced one, but also I think it does sort of have a flow to it. You know, there's those weird left turns, but I think it like clearly builds to like this ambient, you know, mechanical sort of resolution that like very much leads us into NTS4.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're right. I mean, TT1PD into Acid One Idol is sort of strange, and Acid into FLH is pretty strange. But then I think there's things like Gloss Ceramic into G1E1, I think is great. Yeah. You know, like G1E1 is that like perfect sort of letdown. Like Gloss Ceramic is like, I think like maybe the most complex like track on this record.
Yeah.
And then, you know, G1E1 is sort of like it sort of sounds like Boards of Canada, and it's sort of maybe a less complex, you know, Autechre thing.
But there's like a lot of like feedback, you know, sometimes like the feedback on the track like starts to almost like distort the whole thing. And it feels like really of a piece with kind of the squealing, like whining, you know, mechanical sounds we're going to get on Ninefly.
Ninefly, it seems that there's that like feedback that's always, it's like, it's always threatening to, you know, fully squelch into feedback, you know. Always, you know, gets to that, you know, that edge, you know, it's like with those graphs where it's like, it always, you know, approaches zero, but never touches it. It's like that, but with feedback. And I think like, and then going from there into like Shrimp Ripple Air, you've turned into this, you know, Twin Peaks ethereal whooshing, you know, sort of noise, which I think is like such a good transition from Ninefly. So this is an odd one because it has so many of these left turns, but I think that they all fit very well. Like, again, I think that this one, as a standalone album, you know, if the other three don't exist, I think it perfectly works fine. You know, it's not like we're getting from two to four and three is the bridge here.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, so I wanted to ask you, like, what you think of listener Pokey Pox's opinion that NTS3 really comes into its own in the back half, which he or she calls five of the greatest tracks to come from this collection. I mean, it sounds like we're sort of in agreement because there's something like tying it all together, but it feels like the first five tracks are like weirdly just left turn after left turn after left turn. And right at Gloss Ceramic, it settles into like a very consistent kind of sustained. I mean, Gloss Ceramic, you know, the listener even mentioned this specifically, but like it kind of starts out with a lot of like the kind of blown up brassy sounds of TT1PD, but with, you know, kind of an electro kind of groove to it, like a very synthy kind of sound. And then makes this hard shift into like much more overtly, you know, metallic, like ringing and clanging kind of quality, like the kind of sounds we're going to get later on. Do you agree with that? It feels kind of like a grab bag up front and then a actually very consistent kind of development for the last half.
Yeah, I think it definitely like become like that back half like really does very much become like a cohesive piece where the first, you know, section is more of that White Album, you know, mix, you know, grab bag kind of thing. But I think that's maybe what like makes it feel so cohesive is because, I mean, essentially half the record is like incredibly cohesive.
Yeah.
And I think it just sort of, cause even I think things like Acid Idol, like is another one of those like sort of call forward thing, you know, like where it's not in that section yet, but it's getting you there. And I think even Clustro Casual, it's got a lot of energy and stuff, but I mean, it's basically like a repetitive, you know, sort of like krautrocky kind of thing, just with like a beat, you know, like it's got that like great bass drum pattern that's really, you know, high energy and, you know, sort of dancey, but again,
very hip hop ish.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of similar to the back half in that it's, you know, it's very repetitive.
Yeah, mellow.
You know?
Mellow and repetitive and kind of dreamy. Yeah, yeah, that's true. And I mean, I was going to say that, like, it also feels like TT1PD feeling like kind of weirdly out of place on the first hour here. It actually ends up being really, really important for establishing some of that like noisier, brassier stuff we're going to get later. And I always feel like when I'm listening to Ikari, like toward the end, you can hear this kind of like groaning, like kind of, I don't know, abrasive like noise really low in the distance, and it feels like it might blow up into the bombast of TT1PD at any moment. So it's kind of like by the time you get to the end, TT1PD makes sense, but while you're living in that first hour, it feels like you're just going you know, different direction every time.
It's like, you know, some movies you watch, it's like the story doesn't really make sense until, you know, you get to the end and then you know, you can look back and say, oh, you know, I see what was going on now. Like this is sort of like that, because you're right. I mean, I feel like some things threaten to turn into TT1PD, and it's like if we hadn't heard TT1PD, like there wouldn't be that threat, because
and there wouldn't be that menace, because like Ikari is pretty chill, but there's like something very like kind of dark and unsettling about it. And I feel like it's the memory of TT1PD, ghost of that track.
And TT1PD like does such that switch in the middle. It's like, oh, we could have a switch, you know, for your first listen through, who's to say Ikari's not going to switch and blow up into a TT1PD kind of thing. You're right. You wouldn't have that menace if you hadn't have, you know, there's no threat if you don't know what's possible.
Well, I want to ask you what your favorite tracks are, but I'll quiz you on Rate Your Music's sort of individual track rankings, if that can stand in for consensus. There are three tracks that are bolded, the three clear favorites here among fans and listeners. What do you think they are?
TT1PD.
Yes.
Glossoramic.
Yeah.
Clustro Casual.
Yeah, wow. Nice. I think this is the first episode you like completely
actually got
nailed
them.
It, honestly.
I think it's
the very first episode.
I think it's sort of easier on these ones. Yeah, I think TT1PD is the like obvious highlight, you know, for people.
I remember like listening to the live stream and listening to Clustro Casual, and I remember writing like in the chat or whatever, like, this is the best opener of the NTS session so far. And everybody was like, no, it's not, you fucking idiot. You know, and, now all of a sudden the dust has settled and I was fucking right. But what are your favorite tracks on NTS 3?
I mean, I of course love all three of those ones I just said, but I really love Acid When Idle.
Really?
I really do. Wow. I mean, I'm sure that that's maybe one of the lowest, like when I have to guess the lowest rating, that's what I'm going to guess. But I love it. You know, it's just, I've talked about it before, but I love ambient stuff. I love the disintegration loops. I love Phil Nyblock. I love like these unchanging, like mammoth things. It just like, not only is it like, I find it like nice to listen to. It's just also like to have the balls to for 12 minutes to just do the same thing, you know, like in Andy Warhol's like autobiography, he says something like if something's entertaining for 5 minutes, you know, do it for 15. I've always loved that quote. And this is like the, you know, sort of embodiment of that, you know, I think like, I don't know. I just love like the, I don't know if it's like the contrarian in me or what, but I love the absolute balls to do a loop for 12 minutes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'll save my comments on that one just because I tucked listener comments into the least favorite tracks, assuming that it would be a little more divisive. I didn't realize it would be like one of your standouts here. You know, for me, it's quite hard to pick because I kind of side with like that listener Pokepox who wrote in that like the kind of stretch from Glossoramic to Ikari is like my favorite part of this record, and particularly the kind of G1 E1 into Ninefly thing like is I think just so awesome. I can't get over like G1 is like a weirdly gorgeous track with this like kind of wormy like synth. You compared it to Boards of Canada. It's very much like that because it does have that kind of like grainy like,
yeah, the like VHS sound.
Yeah, but it's also got like these metal clangs running through the first half that, you know, just feel like bells chiming, but they have this very like digitized quality to them. Mm-hmm. And there's just something like so, I don't know, like alien, like something I've just never heard about this. I mean, what really sounds like it sounds like a minimalist composition for like prepared piano or something, this thing, but like digital prepared piano. And I don't know, just the way it kind of like leads right into the huge wubbing low end and like more metallic clangs and that like squeaking feedback and stuff we talked about of Ninefly. That's like kind of the highlight for me, but I love a lot of this record. You know, we already touched on listener Pokepox's love of the last five tracks, like I was just mentioning, but I want to note that that listener calls Ninefly easily my favorite singular moment to come from all four sessions. It's such a sickening moment that calls back to the twisted madness of Confield and Draft, now presented in this completely new form, and how it combines a mind-numbing dubsteppy bass with ear-shredding shrieks that almost sound like some mangled performance of dollar store whistles and recorders. I couldn't have put it better myself. The dichotomy of too much low-end and too much high-end makes for a moment of pure chaos, but also a strange beauty. This is also one of listener David's favorites. Listener Jeff calls NTS3 his favorite of the sessions and highlights TT1PD, Glossoramic, and Ikari. Listener Colin calls TT1PD his number one track from the project, with Glossoramic close behind. The first 10 minutes of TT1PD, he writes, is a world-shaking, transformative Autechre banger, with the second half being that world utterly destroyed. I blasted at full volume in my car every time I'm driving without my wife. And listener Jordan had nice things to say about most of the tracks, but I particularly liked what he wrote about TT1PD, which he calls a total hype track with a badass buildup. The woodpecking sound is great, and the abrasive synth from L3 Control returns on this track and is used in a way that sounds like a screeching vocal performance that you would hear in a black metal track. Just wanted to dump all that out there and ask if you have thoughts on any of these, but it does kind of seem like TT1PD and Glossoramic are kind of the consensus highlights. That's the impression I get.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think I agree with that. You know, I think those are the obvious standouts here. I mean, glass ceramic is just like, it's so like complex of sound, you know, like a song and sound design. I think it's like the epitome, you know, like if somebody asked, you know, what is the you know, best sound design Autechre thing. I mean, I think glass ceramic would be a good, you know, choice, perhaps.
Yeah, a very like liquid metal kind of like, I don't know, it's got like a sort of snake-like like synth groove to it. It just feels like the whole thing is oozing.
It's hard to like describe, I think, because I feel like it's so complex that it's difficult to like put into, you know, earthly terms.
Yeah, and TT1PD, of course, is like such a obvious highlight. You know, it does have a, I like that the listener, forget who, compared it to like black metal. It has like kind of a metal energy, like a you know, there's like something like about the shredded noises. They're played in sort of like a rock kind of way, and then when it slows down, it feels like something like a metal breakdown kind of energy. I mean, it doesn't like sound exactly like that.
Yeah.
But that kind of, that same kind of like energy and just pure intensity for 22 minutes or whatever. And yeah. And like, got to shout out that like wood clacking, like those rolls of like wood clacking thing that is just, I don't know, so transfixing like to this track. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know. I'm like at a loss for words, 'cause it's just like such a stunning, like kinetic explosion of energy.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. I don't think I can add anything.
Well, I wanted to read this comment from listener Joe, who writes, TT1PD is the one other song in their discography, aside from Gansgraf, that would fit with the video of the washing machine spinning apart and breaking. But I think it sounds more like a spaceship being chased through an asteroid field and slowly being ripped apart by the battle and the rocks as computer consoles and other inanimate objects inexplicably shoot sparks out of them, 90s Star Trek style. It's the last time in the LSEC NTS series that we have a track as aggressive as this, and it's almost like Autechre acknowledged this by having it just completely explode and implode in its on itself in a violent, painful death. I mean, we maybe talked about this enough, but is it at all weird to you like how aggressive this track is when nothing else on NTS3 or even the rest of the project, or as Joe also notes, even the rest of the discography up to, you know, this point in 2021 goes this hard?
No, I think because like what we talked about, it's like, you know, so many of the, you know, tracks here, and I think maybe in the discography, like threatened to go this hard. And I think, you know, they just had to show you that, you know, it can, you know, you can't just say you've got a nuclear weapon. You've got to test it and show everyone, you know, that you have it or something. And this is their version of that.
Yeah, it's just like, it's always interesting to me when I like kind of look at the track list here and I think like the energy peak is so obviously like by a long shot track 3, you know,
it's like
you wouldn't think that would work at all, and yet, you know, somehow it does. I wanted to ask a little bit more about the, you know, apparently much loved opener Cluster Casual, which listener Jordan describes as good ass creepy as fuck type shit. Listener Joe also wrote, I love how Cluster Casual begins the session. It's a fitting opener, but it gives the impression that things are already in motion, like the opening scene of the second movie in a trilogy. It feels a bit like the menu screen of a video game or the kind of music you might hear in the world's coolest elevator. This isn't meant to bash the track at all. If I was ever on hold with tech support and Cluster Casual was the waiting music, I'd probably feel disappointed when they finally took my call. It's another one of those amazing long NTS specials that you can either zone out and chill to or devote your close attention to and find the endless detail in. I want to bring this up specifically because we talked about, you know, last episode how Sean and Rob mentioned they were interested in this kind of like deep mixing, deep listening kind of vibe here. And, you know, Cluster Casual is such a like steady groove, and it's true. I agree with Joe, to some extent, but it's also weird how it's like so dreamy that I actually have a hard time zoning in on even noticing, you know, any changes in the deep layers, you know, because it just feels like the whole thing kind of washes over you and does have like a very zone out kind of feel, you know?
Yeah, I think it does have a little bit of a zone out. I could agree with that. But I do really like their comment of it being like, you know, the second movie in a trilogy. Yeah. Like it does like this one sort of starts in motion. You know, we've already set up the character. You know, we already know who's who and what's what kind of thing. You know, the wheels are in motion. I like how it's sort of like even just the fade in of the track. Like, I think really works well. In that, I think it's a great opener for the, you know, being so far in these sessions. I think it does sort of like. It's maybe the least, you know, deep listening of, you know, all the, well, I guess maybe Acid would be, you know, another, you know, zone out kind of one. But I think maybe, you know, it's given you that option. You know, I don't think that they assume anyone's going to deep listen, for 2 straight hours or 8 straight hours, you know, even zoned out more. You know, so I think they got to give you like these sort of breaks. Maybe it's odd for the break to be the first track, but you know, it's sort of like acclimating you into the world of this session, I guess.
Yeah, it's just like remarkably easy listening, I feel like, which is again unique for the opening tracks of the NTS sessions, as I said earlier. But I'm just not surprised that it's bolded on Rate Your Music because it is just so like immediately enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Doesn't require the work that, like, you know, T1A1, the first track on NTS1, requires to, like, do that deep listening. But what about Closer Ikari? I know listener Jeff gave it a shout out, and listener Pokepox says it's a pretty special track to me because it's so oddly nostalgic and emotional, but also he also says this is despite it being just more of their usual stuff. Listener Joe said he loves it because it sounds like a greatest hits of the middle section of Confield, but quite a few listeners just seem to have nothing to say about Ikari for some reason. Unlike the kind of long discussions of the previous closing tracks we got, you know, for the previous 2 sessions. So what do you think of Ikari?
You know, I like it, but to go back to the previous listeners, you know, movie trilogy, you know, analogy, it does sort of feel like, you know, in the middle movie of a trilogy, you often don't wrap things up. It's sort of, you know, it doesn't have a you know, final climax. You know, it's kind of either like a cliffhanger or something like that. And this one sort of feels like that, you know. I think it's a good thing. If they ended NTS3 with something, you know, like All In, that is like a very, you know, big climatic thing, and then you got 2 more hours, that's sort of strange. I think,
yeah, but it's weird, right? Because it's like another weird idiosyncrasy of NTS3. It's the only one that doesn't end with like an ambient track. But maybe that was just sort of brilliant because you can't afford at this late stage in the game to stop for like another 20-minute turbile epic casual.
No, exactly. I mean, we're too close to NTS4, which will be so much of that it would be. You know, maybe like in the context, you're here in NTS3 for the first time, and you're, you know, there's this epic ambient closer, you'd be like, oh, you know, that was awesome. But I think once you have all 4, and especially once we're where we are now, where we can look back and listen to them at will, it would be a mistake to end like that. I think, because I kind of have that same feeling about Ikari. It is sort of the one then I don't have as much to say about, you know, it does just sort of feel, I like kind of that greatest hits, you know, Confield kind of thing. Like it does sort of just feel like, yeah, it's a track, like it's good, you know, but I don't have like a lot of specifics to say about it. And I think that's kind of, perfect, you know, I don't want a grand closer here yet. You know, maybe like I said, if NTS3 was its own standalone album, maybe it'd be, you know, maybe I'd have a little bit more of a complaint about that, but I think it's a perfect move for where we are in this set so far.
Yeah, I wrote down in my notes like big to be continued energy on this track. But yeah, it is good. One that I gotta say I love it. I mean, it's got like a lot of the booming kind of low end and a lot of that metallic ringing and stuff we were talking about, but it's kind of fascinating because it's, I don't know, it's like a huge emphasis on the kind of murky low end, and it starts off like in a very amorphous kind of territory, and it actually sort of very slowly over the course of 20 minutes evolves into something with like a pretty steady kind of stomp stomp clang like pattern. And then there's, you know, something that I would kind of compare to like these chiming prepared piano type of notes again. And they get like steadier and kind of more like almost catchy in a weird way and like hypnotic in a weird way. You know, there's this nice little like hi-hat shuffle that comes to join. And then the thing starts to get like a little bit more minimalist, a little bit more sparse as it goes on. But I just think it's fascinating how it kind of like evolves out of, I don't know, what I would kind of compare more to Ninefly in like its kind of amorphous wooziness. It sort of slowly emerges as like a pretty, I don't know, straightforward, like, dare I say, catchy track.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you know, I want to quiz you. I want to ask you what songs you don't like, if any. But, you know, I do want to quiz you, but I feel like it's too easy. You might be surprised that a lot of the other like non-bolded tracks are around the same level, but there's one that is kind of obviously lower. What do you think that is?
Acid Idol.
Actually, no, it is Shim Ripple Air.
Okay.
I thought that was a layup. But is there anything you don't like here?
No, honestly not. I guess if I have to pick a low light, I think G1 E1 is a little, you know, it's a little Boards of Canada-ish. And if anything here has an interlude kind of feel, I think it's that one. But I'm really just, you know, being nitpicky, picking a lowest one. I really don't dislike anything on this record.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way, but I gotta say that I struggled to like even write very many notes about Shim Ripple Air. Like, it seems like its only purpose is to be a pause between Ninefly and Ikari. It's kind of like pure droning, more of that like kind of air steam sound that we heard on, you know, other interludes on NTS2 with the air, you know, title. But, you know, there's some like kind of glitchiness in there and like some really light, light reverb drenched stuttering, kind of similar to Carefree Counter Dronal from NTS1. But for the most part, it's like a very motionless kind of 7 minutes that, I don't know, feels like kind of it's just serving a functional purpose to me.
I could see that. You know, I agree. I enjoy that a bit. You know, I like the droniness of it. I think, you know, Autechre sometimes gets forgotten for being, you know, pretty decent at drone. You know, it just sort of like it makes me think of you know, Pansonic and stuff like that. And I don't know, I enjoy it, but I definitely understand why it's one of the lower ones, and I wouldn't fault anyone for maybe not wanting to listen to ethereal whooshing for 7 minutes.
Yeah, well, I get the impression that Acid Mon Idol, G1 E1, and Shim Ripple Air are a little divisive, but it was nice to hear from listeners who are big fans. Listener Jordan wrote, "Acid Mon Idol sounds very new age and religious. It gives me heavy cult worshiping vibes and sounds like healing music. I can't believe it's actually 12 minutes, but feels like an interlude. It also sounds very regal, like a fanfare." Listener Joe calls it pure Zen drone for 12 minutes and one of the coolest things on any of their albums. On the other hand, listener Pokepox calls Acid Mon Idol boring, but says G1 E1 deserves way more respect than I see it getting. It's basically the minimalism and quietness of PLMA done right, or just better. I like how unassuming and aimless it sounds at first, with these muffled, slightly melodic whacks and thuds before leading into a totally unexpected, almost Indian sounding melody. The entire track has such a unique ambience to me, conveyed with so little. Pokepox also called Shim Ripple Air criminally underrated, and listener David likewise calls it one of his favorites, writing, "It all sounds so cavernous, like hovering above an abyss. Every so often, Autechre delivers a track that absolutely chills me, like V Letter Mix from the Garbage EP, and this one stands out as one of their darker beauties." You know, so we've touched on a lot of these, but I was kind of saving my comments on Acid Mon Idol for this moment. You know, it's unforgettable. I cannot deny that. I mentioned it earlier, but like the first time I heard this, I was like, holy shit. And you mentioned like just the balls to do this track. It's totally true. I mean, it's repetitive, like in a kind of endurance test kind of way. But I almost get the sense that like the loops are untethered from each other, you know, so they're kind of like, you get what I mean? Like they're kind of like phasing in and out of time, and there's like different sort of collisions and stuff that happen. But there's a weird goofiness to it that we were also alluding to earlier that kind of calls back to BQ for me, where there's a lot of like springy sounds, like bouncy sounds, What's that instrument, like a Jew's harp? Is that a racist name or something, or is that the actual name for the thing?
It's the actual name, but they also call it juice harp, you know, like apple juice, so that it's not so racist.
Okay. All right. Well, my apologies. A juice harp. Very much that kind of energy going on, which is like one of the goofiest instruments ever. Obviously, there's stuff that reminds me of kind of insect sounds. I agree totally with that, like kind of regal fanfare like sample. But so I find it sort of hypnotic and transfixing in that way, because it's like all these loops that seem like they're just not even connected to each other and just sort of like colliding in all sorts of crazy ways. But the whole track gives me like the same vibes as like my iPhone alarm. Sort of. It's like I don't chill out to it, because it's kind of like like real alarm energy here. And like, do you actually relax to this, or does it kind of make you a little tense?
No, I don't think it's like super relaxing, but you know, I don't think it needs to be. You know, I talk about I like Phil Niblock a lot. He's got stuff like two trombone piece and stuff that is like pretty you know, kind of unpleasantly, you know, alarm energy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that I don't want to sound like too elitist, but like oftentimes, like, you know, there's the easy drone, which is, you know, the stuff that you can just put on in the background and it is sort of like relaxing, or, you know, new agey or whatever. And then there's the, you know, the drone that is you know, kind of like this, that's a little more abrasive, a little
challenging.
Yeah, a little more challenging. And I just genuinely enjoy it. I always feel like Acid Idol is like, I always like make music and stuff on my own, and like Acid Idol is like the kind of stuff I like to mess with, like, you know, just these untethered loops and like, yeah, you know, a little repeat. And like I'll hang out in my room for an hour and a half or something, like doing that. And I'm like, you know, I wish I had the balls to like put that on a record, you know, or something. But I always figure, know, no one's gonna listen to that. So I really like appreciate you know, them doing it. But it's not just you know, I appreciate the balls in it. I genuinely think it's like an interesting sound. I like those the phasing between those loops is like so not obvious that it like does sort of reward deep listening to to find those little things.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give the wrong impression, because I like admire the hell out of this track. I love listening to it because I find it like sort of fascinating in a weird way, almost like kind of similar to my warm feelings about BQ. But it does have this very jarring quality for me, where I feel like I can't believe Autechre tricked me into listening to a 12-minute iPhone alarm. That's how I feel sometimes. But all right, I think we successfully said something about every track here, but I did want to read listener Joe's comments on Splesh, which he calls one of the most interesting songs in the entire discography, saying, "One thing I love about Splesh is its structure. It seems like after every 16 bars, the rhythm changes. Within each 16-bar section, the rhythm remains the same without major variations, but then it will completely change again to a totally new rhythm. It's like they took the concept of no repetitive beats from Flutter, but did something new with it, something simultaneously more old school and far more advanced, which for me epitomizes what they achieved with NTS sessions in general. It's both as much conventional dance music as you can expect from Autechre in the late 2010s, while sounding totally fresh and alien." Kind of a good point about Splesh and kind of the NTS sessions in general, you know, because I think back to like NTS1, how kind of hip hop it sounds, and like maybe some of the industrial qualities of NTS2, and, you know, the electro stuff that comes to the fore, at least in the first half of NTS3. It does have like a, I don't know, like a throwback, but like totally reinvented quality. You know, that's kind of a consistent theme on NTS.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that is such like an interesting thing about Autechre, and we've mentioned it a lot. It's like, you know, some acts, you know, wear their influences on their sleeve, and it's very obvious. Autechre, it's always like, you know, it's easy to just say like, oh, you know, there's this hip hop influence or whatever, but it's so, you know, perverted throughout their entire career that, you know, it becomes this entirely new thing. And I think NTS is where that like really shines. You know, they make like such this alien sounding music that is easy enough to listen to because there's always like some sort of grounding there. You know, there's always like enough of.
I mean, maybe not always. Like, there are some, you know, really challenging moments in the discography. But I feel like on NTS in particular, there's a lot of that kind of throwback touchstone stuff going on. And like, that's the fun of it. Like, when you, you know, when you go to a club or something, you don't necessarily want to be challenged. Like, you want to dance to like almost familiar grooves.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a fun spirit we talked about last time and we've already been talking about now to this whole record, like a kind of live energy, radio show energy. They're trying to almost show you a good time, but it's, it almost reminds me of XI in that way, of how well it strikes the balance between like the sort of fun of that kind of throwback feel and celebration of electronic music with the total reinvention.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Well, you know, on that note, maybe we've already started doing it, but how would you sum up your feelings on NTS3? Does it deserve its reputation as one of, if not the best of the sessions?
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of waffle back and forth, and I'm definitely going to do it as we talk about it. I waffle back and forth between 3 and 4 being my favorite. But, you know, as we're in the grips of talking 3, I think 3 is maybe my favorite. But it definitely is a 5-star, 10 out of 10 record, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, like, to an extent where it's like, it's got a very mixed bag feel, at least for the first half. But there's something like very fun about that and like thrilling about it. I mean, every track is like completely memorable. Like, I don't think we said much about FLH. It's kind of like it feels like just pure fun, honestly. Mm-hmm. But like, you'll kind of like never forget it when you hear it. And in fact, after listening to 12 minutes of iPhone Alarm with Acid One Idol, FLH is like a treat. I swear to God, like when that like just groove comes in, you are like, I mean, what a reward for making it all the way through Acid Mon Idol if you're a little more like me than Dan. But yeah, I mean, really just like a masterpiece, not just for what it is, but also for the work it's doing, I think, on this whole project, like we were talking earlier. It like really elevates this whole freaking project. But okay, on to NTS4 then. I guess I don't have to bother with the question about whether this one has a unique identity or not, but how would you describe the sound palette and style of this installment?
I mean, this is the ambient, you know, record. This is the come down after, you know, 6 hours of everything else, and we're just, you know, this is the morning after the club or something, you know.
Yeah, it's weirdly, it's like hard to describe for the opposite reason of NTS3, which is that so much of it is one song that, you know, you want to like use that to describe the whole thing. I mean, actually, there's obviously like a chill out kind of like minimalism and a droniness and a sort of stillness to this record as a whole. But, you know, really when I break it down, there's like, let's say 2.5 tracks, if you're counting parts of Shim Ripple Casual, that are really drony, I think, to me. And then you've got 2 other tracks, Frayne Casual and Column 13, which represents 30 minutes of the album. So it's not like a small thing,
yeah,
which are quite, I don't know, quite like percussive, like quite a lot of movement in them and a lot of sort of percussive sounds. Column 13 in particular is like lots of bells and ringing and like sort of rhythmic, you know, I mean, it's light, but it feels like almost tabla music or something in the way that things are like bouncing around off of each other. And actually, you know, and then you think about like Shim Ripple Casual, which has like these kind of eruptions of gyrating, twisting noise and stuff. You know, does it feel like maybe its reputation as, you know, quote, the ambient one feel like a little unfair?
I don't think so, because I mean, you know, you're right. You know, there's definitely some movement, particularly in column 13. Frayne Casual has some, but like, you know, Mirage, whatever is, I think so ambient-y. That sounds like some sort of sound stretched to be 6.5 minutes. You know, like a short thing. You know, stretched so far. I get that you're right. You know, it is 30 minutes of the record, like, isn't that ambient, but it's still sort of ambient. I mean, like you said, even the percussion on Column 13 is still pretty light. I think it's sort of light on Fran Casual. I think, like, because of comparing, like, those two tracks to the rest of the record, like, they feel like the not ambient ones. But I think if you stuck these somewhere else...
Don't forget about, like, Shim Ripple Casual, which is, like... Yeah, it's like sitting on a bed of like kind of drony ambience, quite similar to Mirage in that it's like kind of stuttering and flickering and quite similar to All End, frankly. But on top of it are these big eruptions of like noise, which is not something I associate with ambient, you know?
That's true. But, you know, again, it's sitting on this giant bed of ambient, you know? So I think it's sort of hard to... like displace those moments from within the greater context of the, that section of the record. I just feel, you know, I think this is the, you know, this is the ambient one. And I think while that's maybe not 100% accurate, it definitely like earns this, you know, atmospheric sort of, you know, cold sounding thing, you know, like I don't think it's only because of All End, basically.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I just feel like there's actually a lot of diversity in the sounds here that like gets sort of overlooked, you know, for obvious reasons. But it's, you know, we'll get into it. But I think it's kind of a fascinating album with like a lot of things going on. You know, what do you make of Sean's description of NTS4 as, quote, a deep future, and Rob's more confusing, possibly mistranslated characterization of it as, quote, you don't know what they are doing with the gas or the atomic level stuff, or just as important, cosmic with one another. There's gravity and heaviness. Do you hear any of that?
I hope that that's like a mistranslation because it doesn't make any sense. I think he's like trying to talk about like the universe or something, or you know, maybe like quantum physics or something.
Yeah, or like that's like crossover point between when you think about molecules colliding and like planets and stars and stuff.
I guess maybe that's what he means, and that I can feel, you know, there's sort of like a galactic feeling to this record, you know, being so kind of massive and empty and cold and stuff. Deep future.
It's so funny because I watched like this random YouTube video. It must be just made for stoners or whatever, but it's like the deep time of the universe or something, and it like runs through like at an exponential rate, like what will be happening in the universe. And it's like, you know, okay, at this point, like all the black holes will, you know, swallow everything up, but then they're like going around each other, and then this many like trillion years, like they're crashing into each other, and there's like not much left. And that's kind of what the word deep future to me evokes. And I do kind of think of like this, not just post-human, but like so post-human that it's just particles.
It's space. It's post-consciousness, you know, or post any sort of life in the universe. Yeah.
It's interesting because like we talked about how like NTS1 in particular, and then, you know, maybe less so like by the time you get to 3, but it's still a consistent theme of like that knob twiddling, that live performance energy of like not just a set it and forget it kind of max MSP patch that you're letting like generate and evolve, but something that's being played. You know, by the time you get here, these tracks feel a lot, you know, less like jammy in that sense, and a lot more, you know, generative, not in a negative sense, but just in like the, you know, the program has been set to do this thing, and then it's just running. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. You know, something like All End, I mean, feels like it could go on forever. You know, like it only stops because there was a 2-hour time limit, you know, imposed here. But really, I mean, almost all of the tracks here are really kind of on this session are kind of like that. I mean, there's no real reason why Shrimp Ripple, you know, ends where it ends and flows into All. And I mean, I think it even flowing into All In the way it does kind of leads it to be, you know, it's not necessarily its own track. I mean, they don't really do that like crossfade thing. I mean, do they do it at all? You know, I mean it's hard to remember 8 hours of music, but
very lightly.
Yeah, I think this is the most obvious, you know, and most heavy handed crossfade we're getting here.
And it implies that like Shim Ripple Casual would have gone on forever.
Exactly. And I just feel like this record in general, like sort of feels like it's like NTS4 is the end because, you know, we decided that we would do it for a month, but you know, it could really go on perpetually. And I mean, you talk about like the post-human sort of thing. Like it does sort of feel like, you know, the computer has taken over and it could generate this for, you know, ever.
Yeah. And I think in like a very cool way, it just has this kind
of a positive lack of humanity
or something. But, and I'll probably contradict myself a little bit because there are some like moments on here that, in a paradoxical way are almost like the opposite. But I did want to read this nice description from listener Pokepox, who says, "Session 4, especially its first two tracks, feels more sci-fi to me. Frame Casual feels like being in some broken laboratory hiding on the ocean floor, and Mirage feels like exiting into the deepest trenches of the ocean and being submerged in a darkness beyond discomforting." Listener Joe got a similar impression. He says, "The Column 13 has a fluid and aquatic feel to it. Shim Ripple Casual sounds very aquatic as well, but while Column 13 sounds more like Jacques Cousteau exploring the wonders of the ocean in his tiny submarine, Shim Ripple Casual feels like being stuck on the bottom of the dark, dangerous ocean floor with the crew from Das Boot." That seems to be a constant theme. Do you get those same kind of like sci-fi, maybe aquatic, you know, imagery, or how would you describe the mood here?
Yeah, I mean, I think I lean more towards the sci-fi thing, but I mean, that might just be my personality. I think, I mean, there's such a crossover between, you know, being on the bottom of the ocean and being in the middle of the universe, you know, off a planet. They're pretty, you know, I've done neither, I guess, so I don't really know, but you know, just from what you think, like they seem like pretty similar, you know, experiences, you know, being isolated and being, you know, just sort of surrounded by, I mean, nothing or just, you know, this mass of water. So I think it's sort of like, you know, maybe whichever is your personality you'll go with. But I tend to lead to the sci-fi. You know, I'm not hearing any like noises that I would definitely say, you know, oh, it sounds like, you know, water or a river or something, you know. But I do hear, you know, like the laboratory sort of sounds and clustro or casual, Fran Casual. Like I can definitely, you know, hear that.
I mean, for me, I hear a lot of like bubbling and gurgling and stuff, especially on the on Frame Casual, like kind of, I wrote down like fizzy soda, you know, there's something like about that, like watery. And then Mirage, I think, does have this weird like descending or sinking sound to it, just like in the kind of like the way that the weird like pitches of that track are kind of like, because there's, it's almost like the stuttering noise and these piercing synths, but it's like just drowning in reverb. And they're kind of warping, you know, in like an underwater kind of way. But I kind of like, by the time I got to Column 13, I started to think, yeah, you know, maybe this is like less about underwater and less about space, but more just about that weird crossover point that you mentioned, which is like that feeling you get from both of those things, like the weird, desolate emptiness, like completely uninhabitable feeling when you think about those two things. It's like, you know what I mean? Like not literally about either of those two things, but about that like weird feeling.
No, yeah. That I mean,
connects them.
I think, you know, it's hard to read through that like odd translation, but I mean, that definitely makes sense. I mean, in the same way that the ocean sort of feels like space, I think, you know, when you look at the macro and the micro, they like feel very much the same thing. You know, when you look at the universe as a whole, you know, things are so separated and isolated and stuff, and like, you know, when you look at the super micro, it's the same sort of thing, you know, like an atom is mostly empty space and everything the same way the universe is. You know, not to get too like new agey or some shit, but you know what I mean, like it sort of has that same feeling, just like and really like the two opposite kind of, you know, ends of the spectrum, which I think sort of, you know, the ocean and space are sort of that same, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I just like it feels like this record has like a, I don't know, like a really consistent, like really distinctive mood where it gives me that, like, I don't know, like what would I, like that like gasp I would have if I realized I was stuck at the bottom of the ocean or stuck in space. I don't know. There's just something like very distinctive about it. I want to ask about the sequencing, but I think we've got to address the elephant in the room first. Listener Joe calls All End a strong contender for the greatest piece of music they've ever created, adding, "It's perfectly named. It's a soundtrack to an ending. A beginning is an end to whatever came before it as well. When I listen to All End, I think of moments like the birth of my daughters or the creation of new worlds as much as I think about my own mortality and eventually death or apocalyptic events like asteroids and nuclear wars. All End is a bit like itself, beautiful, noisy, chaotic. A bit like life itself, rather. Beautiful, noisy, chaotic, but orderly, boring at moments, but overall fascinating and full of wonder. On the other hand, listener David said, I have a difficult time enjoying All End, mainly because I know I could be listening to 10 other more engaging AE tracks within its span. Listener Pokebox wrote, All End exposes Autechre at their most pathetic. The fact that they literally just dragged on the outro to Blade Olorus for nearly a whole hour in this attempt to make some dramatic closer falls completely flat as it feels anticlimactic and mind-numbingly bland. It seems as if they weren't even trying with the final hour of this series. And listener Jeff wrote, when I wrote in about my feelings on XI and that while I liked Blade Olorus, I felt it could have benefited from some trimming, you both joked about how I must feel about All End. Well, you guessed it. I fucking hate All End. When Session 4 first streamed and it became apparent that this was how they were going to close this magnum opus, I was furious. I've never listened to All End since. I rarely even put on Session 4 despite really liking the first half because my blood boils just thinking about how All End is on there. The very existence of this track makes me question everything about Autechre. There's an attitude of how fucking dare they. I know I'm probably being a bit overdramatic, and I absolutely love NTS and listen to it all the time, and there's so much to enjoy, but there will always be that part of me that knows it's the album with All End, and that just slightly tarnishes this otherwise immensely impressive status of the album. So, just wanted to dump all that out there. First off, what do you think about All End?
I mean, I think it'll come as no surprise, but I love it. Again, it's that same thing. I mean, to have, you thought they had balls for doing Acid Idol for 12 minutes. We got 53 minutes here of a loop that's got some like what sounds like, you know, kind of tape artifacting and stuff happening. But I mean, it's pretty well looping. I like it. You know, I enjoy that kind of thing. I enjoy the idea behind it, but I get, you know, like that listener's, you know, being so mad about it. I think it's, you know, what they said, like, you know, how dare they? It's sort of like, you know, or you know, it's that sort of like anyone could do it kind of feeling that I think like a lot of people have problems with, modern art for that same kind of thing, you know, like Dada and stuff, you know, like yeah. Fountain, you know, people have that problem of like, you know, all this is a toilet, you know, anyone could have done it. And it's like, you know, but you didn't do it, you know, someone else did and had the balls to do it and stuff. And that's such like an important part of it. I understand why, you know, someone being like, I get that, but I don't want to, you know, why make me suffer for 53 minutes? But it's just such a like it's just such like a relaxing track, and I've still never done it, and I hope to one day have the time, you know, maybe on my deathbed I'll do it or something. Like listening to all 8 hours in a row, like I just feel like if you did that, and All In would just be like such a relief, like such a way to just like decompress, you know, after seven hours of this like giant journey you've been to. And I don't know, I think it's just like the, you know, absolute like perfect way. Like I have the like such a opposite reaction as this listener. Like I think it is like the perfect way to end such a giant like mammoth thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I you know, I'll say that I up front, I just find this like track just utterly breathtaking and just unbelievable. And I just really like disagree with the kind of rep it has. And I feel like listener Jeff should like really listen to it again, because there's actually so much going on. It is not just like a sustained chord for an hour.
Yeah.
It is basically like, you know, something like kind of a church organ or something, but it feels more like just hundreds of layers of, I don't know, strings or like vibrating sound, you know? And, it, you know, when you listen closely, there's like a lot of movement and a lot of, I mean, musical notes happen, believe it or not. Like, what's so fascinating to me is, like, basically if there's, like, let's say there's 1,000 like strings just all like vibrating, you know, in this big wall of sound, and it's like sometimes 300 of them change notes, you know, but the other ones stay. And then sometimes like 800 of them change notes, you know, and there's like a bunch that are really high. There's some that are like incredibly low, like a straight up like body shaking kind of rumble to it. There's like kind of a nice, like kind of organy riff deep down in the middle of there that sometimes like really a bunch of the, let's say like 750 of the string layers like drop out almost completely. And you can hear this kind of like, I don't know, organy, like, you know, sound. You mentioned that the whole thing is kind of flickering and glimmering, like with this weird, you know, kind of graininess to it. Like, I wrote down like watching like an 8mm film or something, you know, it's got this like weird lo-fi quality to it that is very Baczynski and that kind of flickering. And it's just like, you know, I guess the last thing, so I want to mention that, like, it just reminds me of like listening to My Bloody Valentine or something, where like the textures, I mean, you could listen to the textures for hours, not just 1 hour, I feel like. And the last thing I want to say is just that, like, how much it actually evolves and grows. You're always hearing new things, new musical motifs, even deep in there. But like, you know how it kind of like, it becomes like this huge surge of energy, and then it like really mellows out a lot. And then by the end, it somehow like quadruples in size. You know, like, it's wrong to just call this a wall of sound. It is like, there's so much movement.
Yeah. I mean, it's that thing again, where it rewards deep listening, you know. Yeah. It's the same thing, you know, with Baczynski. It's easy to like listen to Disintegration loops or this or anything and say, it's just the same. It's just loop over and over and over. But yeah, it's those subtle changes that like make it so interesting. You know, I get why someone maybe, you know, wouldn't have the patience or wouldn't want to have the patience to, you know, dissect a 50-minute piece and find those little things. But I mean, I don't know, I love that, like, as a task in music. Like, I really enjoy like being able to dig in and find those little pieces that maybe, you know, when something like on the surface seems so repetitive and unchanging. Yeah. And stuff, it's like, I don't know why I find it like rewarding, but it is, you know, it's very rewarding to you know, it's like a challenge. You've overcome like this 54-minute, you know, challenge. Yeah. Kind of thing.
See, I also like feel the opposite, because like I said, like, there are worlds to discover in this track, like, I swear to God. But I also find it very easy to just like kind of zone out too. You know, it's just the weirdest thing where, like, you know, these past 2 weeks, I would like throw on NTS4 and I would like not really, you know, I would like not intend to, I'm not going to listen to it all in one sitting. And I would like accidentally just do it. And I didn't even like really notice that I had been listening. You know, I would just like check, like, oh, what how far am I? Oh, I'm like already 50 minutes into All End. Like, I didn't even notice. Mm-hmm. Because it's like breathtakingly gorgeous. I swear to God, there's so much melody buried in this thing. It's, you know, we'll talk about like Column 13 a little bit more in a second, but it's like, that's quite like a obviously beautiful track. I mean, we talk about this on a couple tracks throughout this trip through the discography, but it's like, rarely are they so like openly pretty. And I feel like All End is like generously pretty. Like, it's just a very, very pretty track and just so easy to like have on and listen to. You know, I don't know. I just feel like we could talk about this for hours, but it's, I don't know. It's like, if you hate the idea of it, there's just worlds to discover.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing is, I mean, like this listener said that they listened to it the one time, you know, when it aired live, and then they essentially have never listened to it again. It's that thing. I think, yeah, if you give it another chance and you open up to it and you realize that there actually is like this whole, you know, giant world underneath the surface there, you just gotta give it your attention.
Yeah. And the other thing I really love about it, which I kind of made me realize this past week, like something that I just love so much about Autechre in general, is like they do a lot of this kind of, you know, we call it physical modeling or whatever, where they're like making sounds that sound like real, you know, things. And they're actually so fucking good at it that I can understand somebody being like, what's the point? Like, you know, they made something sound like a metal door or whatever. And they did it so perfectly, they could have just recorded a metal door. You know what I mean? But this track is a good example of like what they're always doing, which is, you mentioned like the glitchiness, you know? And you think sometimes like this could be a literal field recording in a cathedral. You know, this could just be a Tascam set up in a cathedral with like some huge organ droning. And then it glitches and you realize that it's like created out of, you know, zeros and ones. And like, there's something like, it's almost like virtuoso, you know, to that, but it's like, you're suddenly re-impressed every time it glitches. Like, holy shit, they built this just cavernous, enormous wall of sound out of code, you know? And they do that all the time through the discography where like they create these sounds and it just sounds like a simple little something, you know, like I can't remember which track it was, but like Mirage, where it like sounds like somebody, you know, when you like spin your finger around a glass, you know, and it makes it like kind of sounds just like that. And it's like, okay, well, you could have just recorded it, but there's like this weird digital quality to it that just reminds you, no, they like built it, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, because All In really does sort of like almost sound like, you know, a real instrument in a real place. But then, yeah, there's those little moments that it's like those glitches are just there to be like, it's a peek. Yeah, it's a peek behind the curtain or something. Like, hey, yeah, you know, we didn't just play this in a church, you know, kind of thing. Like, Mirage does the same thing. I mean, they do it a lot throughout their whole career. I mean, it's just the like effort and you know, just skill of like creating those sounds is just crazy.
Yeah, and like those, we got to stop gushing about it because we'll spend like forever on it. But, you know, it's just like the way that it glitches suddenly sometimes, and the way it just ends, I think listener Joe shouted this out as well, but the way it just like, it ends like quite abruptly, like it just dissipates into nothing. And you like realize all of a sudden, every time it glitches and at the end, you realize like, oh, this was just nothing. It was like a magic trick that I was listening to. It was like, it was a computer doing this. And it like, there's something about like that surprise that, I don't know, it's just so, so impressive. But, okay, the question is, does All End work as the closer of NTS4? You know, we'll talk more about it, but like,
as if it was its own record.
If NTS4 is its own record, does it just completely overshadow everything here, or does it work as a closer?
I think, you know, it's a hard question, because I think maybe if NTS4 is its own album, maybe 53 minutes, you know, half the record is maybe a little overdoing it. It does maybe sort of overshadow it, you know, because it doesn't overshadow, you know, when it's half, I think it becomes a little overshadowy. But when it's an eighth, it's not quite as much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's really difficult to say, because I like this as an album on its own. But I think, like, personally, I do, because I think I like this kind of music and stuff, like I've talked about. But I think, like, I'm trying to think, like, what the critical reception would be if NTS4 was its own thing. I think this wouldn't be a fan favorite. I think it'd be a divisive thing. You know, people would either really love it or they would really hate it. But I think,
yeah,
I think All In, you know, as a closer for NTS as a whole, I mean, it's easy to sort of look at when, you know, you said the individual, you know, rankings like come out to like a 3-5-8, and the, you know, the thing as a whole comes out as a 4. I think that's like sort of indicative of that, even though 4 is one of the highest rated ones. You know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a fool's errand, because it's like,
exactly,
it's like asking if a track would be good if it wasn't on the album. And it's like, well, yes, but it is on the album. So like, what do you want me to, you know, like, or if like a scene from a movie, would it still be good if it wasn't on the movie? You know, like, but I think, you know, I agree, it would be super divisive if NTS4 was like just released as its own album, but I would like it. I would be one of those people that love it. I mean, I feel like it does kind of a, you know, you think about it, it's an hour that the first four tracks are. That's like a very substantial amount of time.
That's a normal record, like, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to ask about, like, if NTS4 has the LSEC problem of, like, despite being long, having too few tracks to develop an identity. And I just really don't think so, because I think, like, those first four tracks are an incredibly satisfying experience. But it's like almost the perfect balance where it's not quite satisfying on its own. And I think All End is not quite satisfying on its own. And they kind of come together to form like this great 2-hour experience. And like, you know, think about, it's like easy to forget how fucking long Shim Ripple Casual is. It's like 25 minutes. I mean, that's pretty substantial. And it kind of does this work of, you know, it almost feels like a closer when I'm listening to it. I feel like that track is kind of the sound of like loops running out and batteries dying and stuff like that, with that like weird, you know, burst of like twisted sound we were talking about earlier. It sounds mm-hmm. almost like some of the machines from NTS2, like Volvic or something, just dying and like malfunctioning as like the, after the humans have been wiped out and the world no longer exists. And it's just like kind of trying to do its rounds, but like, you know, fucking up every time and malfunctioning.
Yeah.
It has this very like, I don't know, just perfect, like, you know, like All End is a coda, and yet it's such a necessary coda because like, I don't know, maybe I'm not even making any sense, but you get what I mean? It's like they need each other, these two halves of the record.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, if All In was, you know, for some reason its own release, you know, an EP or something, I agree. I don't think it would have quite the impact that it does. And same way, you know, the first, you know, if it was this record, the first hour of this record without it, I think it would, you know, it would miss that sort of final punch also, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to bring this up. Listener Joe wrote, people often compare All End with Perlin's Subrange 636 from the Chorus is Quadrange EP. But aside from both oddly being roughly 58 and a half minutes long, All End is in a completely different league. Subrange is an interesting experiment that's cool as background music, but All End is a sonic experience that melts the world around you and that I could live within indefinitely. I wanted to ask you about this because you also love Perlin's Subrange, and I'm a little bit... you know, mixed on it, because I feel like it's something that it's a really cool ending, but I don't feel like compelled to listen to it start to finish the way I do with All End. Do you see them as different, or are they like similar experiences for you?
No, I do see them as different. You know, we talked about with Perlin's Subrange and stuff that like Ottinger had said that, you know, they would kind of just leave these tracks going, you know, while they're doing right. stuff around the house and stuff. And Pertolence like sounds like that, you know, it sounds like a set it and forget it kind of thing. It's just its length, because that's where they decided to turn it off. You know, it could, it really is much more of a loop than All End is. You know, All End, while being, you know, loopy and stuff, it definitely like is building and has all these, you yeah. know, things hidden underneath it. Doesn't sound, I think it sounds set it and forget it when you just, you know, listen in the background or something, but I think like
right
you know, Perlence, a deep listen to it, you're I don't think you're going to discover much more that you didn't already hear, whereas yeah. like All yeah. End, I feel like All End, it's almost like every time you put it on or something, you find something you didn't notice before or something, you know, there's definitely, while it doesn't sound like, you know, somebody sitting there and twisting knobs and changing, it's like you said, you know, it's like the batteries are dying, the machine's breaking down, and it's, you know, we're getting errors in between, you know, and it's causing these differences that are, you know, sort of like natural, you know,
yeah.
changes in it.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like, yeah, Perlence has that kind of set it and forget it quality, which is like interesting. It's like looking at a portrait or something. A lot of the tracks yeah. on LSAC had a similar vibe, where it's like you can just sort of observe all the things around, but it's not like alive, it's not moving necessarily. All End feels like this just cathartic like rush of like release of energy or something, and it's like almost propulsive in a highly listenable and honestly like kind of moving way. But all right, besides All End, you know, what are your, well, I guess I should quiz you real quick. There are three bolded tracks here. What do you think they are?
Well, that, I mean, good odds here. I think All End is probably bolded.
Yeah.
Column 13 and Fran yep. Casual.
Nope. Shim Ripple Casual.
Damn.
Is the other, it's the last three here. Yeah, you had good odds, but you still.
Yeah, I still fucked it up. Yeah.
But besides All End, are there any other tracks that are favorites for you here?
I mean, we've only got five here. I like them all. I think I like Shrim Ripple casual quite a bit. Fran casual is really good. Column 13, like we said. You know, Mirage, I guess, is maybe the lowest point on here, but with five, I mean, they brought the noise with all five tracks, I think.
Yeah, I don't really have a bad thing to say about any track here. I mean, I think they're all like just stunning, and I don't know, they're just all fascinating, and they all like kind of serve this like great purpose on the flow of the record. You know, we heard from quite a few listeners who love Column 13 in particular, like listener Jeff, who calls it Session 4's peak. Listener Jordan also wrote in to say, hey guys, I know how much you love Oversteps and wish it were longer, but Column 13 would fit right in there. It sounds like what those really long Overstep sessions would sound like. Listener Joe wrote, I look forward to hearing what you guys think about Column 13. When I was listening through these sessions for the first time, I was absolutely delighted to hear it, as I have always been a huge fan of Oversteps, and it basically returns that world for 17 minutes. I'm the kind of person who could listen to music that sounds like Oversteps endlessly, but I realize that it's not everyone's cup of tea, so I imagine that you might consider it to be one of the weaker points of the album. So what do you think about Column 13, and do you agree with the Oversteps comparison, which we were not so hot on?
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I like Column 13. I guess it does sort of have a Oversteps-ish feel to it, and yeah, I guess I wasn't incredibly hot on Oversteps, but I don't know, maybe it works better just being 17 minutes of it, like, within this larger context.
Yeah, I kind of wondered that too. Like, would I like Oversteps if it was like just a little bit spread out? But honestly, the more I thought about this question, because I love Column 13, but it does have like those same kind of like plucky, you know, like sounds bouncing off of each other and tangling around and like rippling tones. And there's just like, there's just so much movement and energy, I think, in this track, like, you know, just bubbling arpeggios and stuff. I mean, it's just like gorgeous. And that all reminds me of Oversteps, but I feel like there's something a little bit more like meditative about it. You know, there's something about like Oversteps that is so almost pop. Like a lot of people compare it to like classical, you know, little like sonatas or something. Like they're like these tightly crafted little highly melodic, you know what I mean? Like sort of directional things. This is like kind of drifting, meditative. But it's not so like, because a lot of times on Oversteps, there would be like just these generative, like kind of like pretty notes, and they just like kind of maybe serving as the backdrop for like the lead melody or something. Mm-hmm. And they would be like a little uninteresting, like sometimes a little uninspired to me. But here it's just like the fact that it leans so heavy into that sort of like the space between notes and stuff and the collisions of the notes. And also, like I mentioned earlier, the emphasis on the rhythm. You know, Oversteps is, I think, so much more about the melody than the rhythm, even though there are some rhythms and pulses and stuff there. To me, this is like a rhythmic workout. Like I mentioned, it's like a tabla jam or something with just all these bouncing, pinging sounds. I get the comparison, but it just feels like a very different approach to maybe a similar sound palette.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually. And I think maybe that is why I enjoy Column 13 more than Oversteps as well, because, yeah, Oversteps focused on the melody. And I mean, I prefer the percussion and the beat, I think. And here you're sort of getting that sound palette, like, with more of that, even though, I mean, not to say it's, you know, some high energy track or anything, but you know, I think, yeah, you're getting the Oversteps palette like through a what I think is a more interesting lens.
Yeah, but I do think it is kind of like the peak of energy here, and I think it's kind of fascinating how this record's flow from like, it feels like a sort of a build up into Column 13, and then like this very long like come down somehow, which is like, I don't know, just an interesting structure for an album. I guess we talked about Shrim Ripple Casual. You love that one too?
Yeah. I mean, I think Shrim Ripple into All End is like the best like section we get on NTS. But it, on its own, it's such like an interesting, you know, drone kind of thing. Again, we've got these like stretched out sort of sounds, those like noise, you know, blasts, yeah, or whatever that come in.
It's and just, like each one is completely unique. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I could like listen to it forever, because every time the noise blast happens, it like twists in like all different weird shapes, and every single one is different. It's like I can't wait for the next one to hear like,
yeah,
what it's wild shape it's gonna take.
it's like, I don't know if it's algorithmic or generative or what, but it sort of like feels like that, because you're right, you know, it's they're all different, and it again like rewards the deep listening, which with a 24-25 minute track, whatever it is, you know, that's what makes it worthwhile, you know, is being able to dig in there and find all these, you know, different things each time.
Yeah, well, I want to move on to negatives. I guess there's no sense in quizzing you since you already know which tracks are unbolded. you know, almost all the negatives we got from listeners were like 100% focused on All End. But if Ray, your music is anything to go by, it's Frame, Casual, and Mirage that are at least loved tracks here. I mean, you mentioned not loving Mirage maybe as much. You know, I guess I'm in the same boat where it's like, if I had to pick one, that's the least interesting, but it's still like, you know, I think it was a listener that said, and I kind of agree, it's just like almost nailing what a lot of the like interlude tracks on NTS2 were doing, but just like elevating that so much. It's mm-hmm. I feel like it deserves to be its own track, and it's like kind of fascinating in its like, you know, endless sort of sinking descent feel, underwater kind of feel that I was describing earlier. And I don't know if I clarified this, but Frame Casual, I love. I'm like a real sucker for like what is basically a soundscape, but it's been turned into like a steady rhythm or something. You know, there's like a little shuffling hi-hat. It just feels like this weird sound collage or something, but it's all been worked into some rhythmic shape, which I find just completely transfixing. Do you have any other comments on those two?
No, I mean, Mirage, same kind of way. You know, if I have to get rid of one or have to pick a low light, I would say that one. But only, I mean, basically, it's 6 minutes. It's the shortest thing here. It's the closest thing to a interlude. You know, it's sort of the obvious one to get rid of, you know, if you had to. But yeah. I really have no complaints. I mean, I think this is another 5-star, you know, 10 out of 10 record here. You know, like I said, I think it's kind of depends on my mood, but I waffle back and forth between 3 and 4, you know, being my favorite one.
Yeah I mean, I feel like this is another one where, and maybe it's just because it's a much shorter track length, but it's like they hit on every single one. Like every single one is absolutely memorable and essential to the experience of the album. On that note, I think we could start zooming out now by talking about NTS4 in the context of the album. Maybe moving a little more quickly, because we gushed for so freaking long that we're about to pass the length of an NTS session. But listener Colin wrote in to say that the sessions themselves have this perfect flow to them. They really feel like 4 2-hour albums sequenced with their own openers and closers, and they flow from the opener album, T1A1 equals track 1, album 1, to the closer album, NTS4's fully ambient come down, climaxing with All End after being teased midway through the album in Splash. Listener Kieran said that NTS was his first exposure to Autechre and wrote, "Over 4 days, I listened to each session, enjoying the peaks and valleys of Booth and Brown's IDM journey. Unfortunately, I don't really remember any standout songs from them, well, except one. After the final few tracks of session 4, the experimental beats gave way to All End, a single near hour of droning. I could feel it bore into my soul, leaving me dazed and utterly enraptured. Every track prepared me for that experience. I can't listen to All End without listening to the preceding sessions first." So we kind of already touched on it, but what do you make of NTS4 and All End specifically as the closer for this entire project? Does it pay off and like deliver what the other sessions had promised?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think that this really like solidifies this as a worthwhile 8-hour project and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've hinted at, you know, 1 and 2, you're sort of, you know, still finding your footing. You know, is this gonna be, you know, this big cohesive thing? I think 3 starts to tie together, and then 4 you know, leaves you with no more doubt.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, listener Joe did some statistical analysis for us. He posted this on Reddit, actually.
Oh yeah.
And found that he found that All End makes up 12.16% of the album, which is pretty damn close to the average Autechre closer at 12.64% of its corresponding album. So does that put it in a different perspective? Like maybe it's not actually such a meant to be an overwhelmingly long, you know, endurance test. It's actually just like their normal closer kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I saw when he tagged us in that, and I mean, that's super interesting, because yeah, it's technically a little bit under average in its length. Yeah. I mean, maybe it isn't so long.
Yeah. It's just like rare that you're going to be listening to all 8 hours, but I feel like then it would maybe feel, a little bit less paradoxically of an endurance test, and we're just like a fitting, totally appropriate closer length. I want to just touch on those threads we discussed earlier. I see this criticism sometimes, but do you think NTS 4 stands too much apart from the other sessions, or does it successfully feel like tied into the rest of the album? You know what I mean?
No, I think it's tied in because NTS 3 was working us in that direction. 3 was that middle record or middle movie in the trilogy, and 4 is that closer. Maybe it doesn't call back as much, but I think like by that was 3's job. Four doesn't need to do that anymore. The 4 needs more of its own identity and to end the thing. And I think it works perfectly there.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like the one NTS session that doesn't contain, obviously not, look forwards, but doesn't contain any like flashbacks to the earlier sessions necessarily, but three did that job and kind of set the stage for 4, which I don't know. It just feels like totally inevitable. By the time you get to All End, you're like, this is how it had to end. Mm-hmm. Last time we heard from several listeners who praised this album's increased emphasis on pure ambient. Listener Colin writes, NTS is the release where Autechre fully commit themselves to becoming one of the best artists in the ambient space. Autechre have dabbled in beatless ambient pieces before, but never fully committed. XI was 17 tracks, one was ambient. LSEC was 21 tracks, two were fully ambient. NTS, on the other hand, is 36 tracks, and I would describe 14 as ambient. There are also numerous ambient moments within tracks. He goes on to say that this shift points away towards Sign and Plus. So what do you think about that when you think about NTS? Does it feel like a breakthrough in the ambient direction, or have AE always done great ambient and this just happens to be the longest album, so it has the most ambient tracks?
I think they've always, sort of done good ambient work, but it's never been their main focus. I think it's not the main focus here on NTS, but I think when you have, 8 hours to play with, you can stick some of that in there. And also, ambient works better in long form, I don't want a 10-minute ambient EP or something, you know what I mean? Like, I want right. 2 hours or something, So I think they just are able to do it here more.
Yeah, I feel like, think about music in general, I'll say that Autechre never makes this mistake, but something that always bugs me is when, like, artists, I don't know how to put this, you have to kind of like commit to ambient and experimental. You can't just like throw an experimental track in the middle of like an album because it just fucks up the momentum and messes everything up. Like, you want to be like kind of in the ambient headspace or in the experimental headspace or whatever, electroacoustic headspace. Autechre always does a nice job of like using it to like get somewhere or transition to something, even if that, what you would call an interlude is just as interesting as some of the main tracks. And here they just do such a nice job, I think, of like moving into that space and then fully committing to it with NTS4, where it works. It's not just like a random intrusion of non-musical sound.
Yeah, definitely. In the 60s and 70s, like that became like a problem, like a lot of people's solo albums or something would throw in like some, they had a Moog in the studio and they would dick around. Yeah. Jerry Garcia's self-titled solo album, like that Spider God thing, I think it's called. It's just like, I don't really want to listen to you dick around on a Moog for 8 minutes. And then get back to your normal,
right.
song. George Harrison's first solo album is like that and stuff too. It's dicking around. Whereas like Autechre, they're always like, there's a point to it and like, or a reason behind it. It's always moving you somewhere. It's a space between some things. Like it always has a purpose.
Yeah. I just can't tell you how many times, I'll be like reading The Wire and I check out some, hyped up experimental, just new frontier of pop music or something like that. And it's like, first two tracks are like really interesting, and then all of a sudden they go into like full sound collage territory for like an 8-minute, track 3, and it's just like, then they jump right back into like the, you know, poppier side of things. And it's just like, okay, well, what was the fucking point of that?
Yeah, but, exactly.
I don't know. Ottinger do a nice job committing to it. Okay, let's see. So some more zooming out further, hopefully tying a bow on this thing pretty soon with some big picture questions. You know, we heard from some listeners who thought that the length of NTS was fully justified and others who thought it definitely wasn't. And this week, listener Pokepox wrote in to say, I can usually only take NTS in chunks, but I do generally find that its length is justified. It's really interesting to hear Ottinger explore singular ideas in these lengthy tracks, but also features many shorter tracks that I quite like. And listener Colin said, for an 8-hour release, it's surprisingly devoid of filler. I saw a comment on the subreddit recently that explained this pretty well, where someone said, if they only had 6 hours of solid material, there would only have been three sessions. With the exception of certain ambient tracks being extended to meet a perfect 120 minutes, every track feels necessary here. This raises a couple important questions. First, is the length of NTS justified? And second, do you ever feel like they are stretching things out to fill the, you know, 2 hour or 8 hour chunks? Or is it possible that they're actually like squeezing as many ideas as possible in?
Well, to the first question, I think it is justified. You know, I like that quote the listener wrote in, it is like devoid of filler for being, you know, 8 hours. I mean, you think of like how many, you know, other albums that you listen to, especially, you know, from the 90s or something, that are an hour long, and you could have cut 20-30 minutes from that and had a much better record. You know, I mean, to do 8 hours, and I mean, there's essentially nothing I would like really cut. You know, there's no song on any four of these that I like absolutely hate. You know, I'd maybe shave the length of one or two, but I mean, for 8 hours, that's crazy. I don't generally feel like they're stretching things to fill the 8 hour, you know, 2 hours each time. You know, I mean, sure, All In is probably exactly its length for a reason, because it's sort of the thing that sounds like it could go on forever. You know, like I said too, you know, there's some things I would shave. I think BQ goes on a little too long, and maybe that's to fill time here. But I mean, for being 8 hours, I wouldn't say there's more than a couple minutes of fill in time, if at all.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like everything here is absolutely essential. It's all killer, no filler, and the like presence of so many shorter tracks, like this listener mentions, I think just totally belies the idea that they are stretching or trying to fill time. Like, you know, would anybody be mad if Carefree Counterdronal went on for like another 2-3 minutes? Like, of course not.
It's no,
like,
exactly.
Amazing. It's wonderful, you know? And it's like, they could have stretched any of this shit and saved some of this stuff. It feels honestly to me like they're cramming as much as possible in here. And we talked last time about how so many tracks like T1A1, it has to be long to like make any sense or have any
exactly
impact.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like this is just a generous like heaping of, you know, even it's like at least 10 hours of ideas given to you in an 8 hour package. That's my opinion. So we also talked last time about how NTS plays with formats. It feels like this modern style data dump, and yet it's neatly packaged in two almost extinct formats, the vinyl record with 20 minute sides, you know, on the radio broadcasts. Shout out to listener Joe for making this great point last time. But as we all know, NTS4 sort of screws this up, since Shim Ripple Casual gets divided into two parts on vinyl and All In gets divided into three. Listener David also wrote in to say, I love engaging with the NTS sessions in the CD box format. At an hour apiece, this feels like the ideal amount of time for me to mentally absorb the sheer volume of material presented, much like the length of their long players from before. At the same time, he admits that physical formats can sometimes cut some of the connective tissue between tracks, but that he actually likes how All End rolls in like a fog from nothingness. He also goes on to ask, how do you feel about how physical formats can interrupt track-to-track flow on NTS? I should mention that listener Joe also said, although I love the transition from Shim Ripple Casual into All End, I prefer the CD version without the crossover when listening to All End on its own. A lot to unpack here again, but I wonder if you have any thoughts about the physical versions of NTS, and if the length of NTS4 makes you rethink any of our previous discussion about Ottinger's kind of embrace of the limitations of format here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I have the vinyl box set of this, and honestly, for like, it doesn't work great, you know. It's not ideal at all. Like, All In like really loses a bit of its edge. Like, not only when you have to flip the disc over, but then also get a third disc out of another jacket, you know, put that on, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's really not ideal. You know, Shrem Ripple, same sort of problem.
Yeah, because it's like a 5 minute little piece on one side, you know, before you then flip to the other 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's really not ideal. You know, I think it works good with all the other ones because, you know, they're you can take little breaks in there and it sort of gives you that opportunity. But NTS4 is the one that seems the most, you know, has the most flowing into tracks and everything. And length and everything. So 4 really does kind of fuck it up a little bit. You know, like
I got two Gabe overthinks it that I want to hit you with.
Okay.
What you think. Okay, the first one is, and I'm not even sure I 100% believe this, but the first overthinks it is that the idea of the NTS session is like about the limitations of format, and then NTS4 breaks the formats and emerges into the, you know, freedom of like formatless music. You know, it's like vinyl, radio shows, extinct formats. We then emerge into the digital frontier. What do you think about that?
That's overthinking. I feel like Warp was like, you know how we could make $120 from a bunch of kids?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's something to think about. The other overthinks it. This is even worse, okay? That the NTS sessions is a walk through Autechre's career. I'm sure I'm not the first to think of this, but NTS1 is like pure hip-hop, the roots, you know? NTS2 is the industrial, the abrasive, like the tri-repete sort of period. NTS3 is like the digital sheen of like LP5 into Confield and stuff like that. NTS4 gets us into the generative, you know, Max MSP stuff of like oversteps and sort of emerges out into the Sign Plus territory. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's definitely more reasonable. I think we may have even sort of mentioned stuff like that a little bit before. I mean remember when these first came out, with the last track being All End and stuff, there was, you know, people were getting worried that it was the end of Autechre, you know, because it did sort of feel like this kind of grand finale, you know, greatest hits kind of thing. Luckily it wasn't that, and it did just sort of like morph into the next version of Autechre or whatever. But I think that's more reasonable. And I think, you know, a lot of people would agree with you.
All right. 1 out of 2 ain't bad.
No. That's 50%. You know, it's a F, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to ask how you would sum up your thoughts on the NTS sessions as a whole. But first, I want to read this comment from listener Joe, who writes, I think you can make a strong argument that NTS is not only the best album Autechre have ever released, but quite possibly the greatest electronic album of all time, depending on your criteria. It's full of familiar ideas without ever feeling nostalgic or like something that could ever sound dated. It pushes the boundaries of music while remaining supremely enjoyable and listenable, unlike a lot of other boundary pushing experimental music. It adheres to and embraces format and structure while simultaneously breaking far out of the expected mold of what an album is supposed to be. The music is chock full of detail that rewards endless repeat listens while simultaneously working as a soundtrack to life in general. I think it's very likely that its stature in the music world grows over time and that it gets looked back upon as Autechre's true masterwork and a benchmark of electronic music in general. What do you think about that, and how would you sum up your feelings on the NTS sessions?
I think the listener makes a lot of good points there. You know, I don't see how this could ever sound dated, and if it does one day, music's getting crazy. You know what I mean? Like, I sort of hope it does, just because I would like to hear what makes this sound dated. I definitely agree. I think it's one of the best electronic records. It's one of the best Autechre records. You know, I'll save it for when we say our rankings here in a second.
One of the best records, like, period.
yeah, definitely.
It's like an all-time record.
Yeah, I 100%.
Well, before I ask about your rankings of the album itself, did you give any thought to how you would, we kind of put this on pause last time, but how you would rank the individual sessions?
Yeah, I talked about it. you know, on Rate Your Music, I always rate everything I listen to just for my own personal enjoyment. And I said I had a problem like doing one and two because it was really kind of hard to like think of them out of context. It became easier once I also then got three and four in there. And, you know, it became clear again that three and four, you know, are my favorites. And I gave both of those, you know, five out of five. And then one and two, I did put at four and a half, both of those. But in a, you know, moment of hypocrisy, I've always had and still have the like entire session, like as a whole, as a, you know, perfect five. Though, and I always complain to my wife about this. She thinks that you can think an album is a 10 out of 10, but want to skip a song on it. And I say, well, that doesn't make any sense.
I think that's true. I think it's totally true.
I don't because, and I hate to bring this up now, but like, you know, like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, she skips, I can't remember what song, but there's one song she always skips
so
on
appalled.
It. Yeah, I think it is So Appalled. And I say it can't be 10 out of 10 if you don't like all the songs. Like that's a, you know, whatever the percentage
is.
It's a 9 out of 10 or whatever.
I think the sum
I'm glad she won't listen to this and hear you.
I think actually, I'm hesitating before I commit to this, but I feel like every classic album has like one dud song. Like it almost can't be one of those like transcendent masterpieces without one like what the fuck is up with this track.
Well, this is a whole nother podcast, but I completely disagree.
we'll pick that up. I feel like it's the mark of a great album when there's one track that everybody's like, what was the deal with that track? But anyway, so I think, you know, before these 2 weeks or 4 weeks rather that we've spent with the NTS sessions, I would have definitely said the NTS 3 was my favorite, and probably would have put 2 next, then 1, then 4. And after spending a month with just NTS sessions, I feel like I've totally changed where NTS 4 is my favorite, like my clear favorite. I'm putting NTS 1 next because it is so groovy and like so much fun. I'm putting NTS 3 after that because it's such a like fascinating left turn after left turn, like we were saying. And then NTS 2 last because it's the only one with like kind of some forgettable tracks, you know, like I they're great, but like I honestly right now cannot remember which one is Gunk Tough High and which one is Dummy Casual 2. You know what I mean? Like there's little, or, you know, which one is Sinistral Air, obviously, and which one is Wet Gellis Casual Interval. But like, there's just something like a little bit less consistent about that one, even though like the highs are just incredible. So that being said, where did the NTS sessions as a whole land on your running rankings of every Autechre release we've discussed on the podcast so far?
I put it at number 2. You know,
wow.
I really debated, honestly, putting it at number 1, but there's a Tri Repete is number 1 on my list. Tri Repete is perfect. There's like nothing I would change about it. Whereas NTS, you know, like what you just said, I completely agree with what you said about too. You know, there's some forgettable moments, and like, yeah, is that maybe forgivable in 8 hours? You know, to not like 3 or 4, right, you know, little sections, but it's not perfect. You know, that there is maybe moments I would skip if I was the kind of person who would skip things on a record.
So it's your, so this is just your rule about every track has to be a 5 out of 5 for it to be perfect.
Yeah. Even though now I think about it, my favorite album of all time is Blonde on Blonde. And I don't think Rainy Day Women is that great of a song. So maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong here, but, I would never skip it. and I just
track 2.
Yeah, I would never do that. I just feel like, there's a long time where I was like, I'm gonna put this in number 1, but then I couldn't like agree with myself that I would rather, there's just too many like little things. I think I would rather listen to Tri Repete than all 4 NTS.
Wow.
But only barely.
I'll say, I'll say that I put NTS at number 1.
I thought you would. I really did think you would.
Before we started this, I thought, actually long ass time ago, I was like, well, NTS is going to be number 1. And then when we listened to the first 2 sections, I was like, Yep, it's definitely going to be number one. And then we listen to the last two sections. I like them even more than the first two sections in some ways. So I was like, well, then it's super number one. So I knew it was going to win, and it did. Just a amazing record. But I guess real quick, you want to count down your top 10 as it currently stands?
Yeah, 10, EP7, Confield, Elsec 1 through 5, Choristus at number 7, Amber, LP5, appropriately at number 5, XI at 4, Chiastic Slide, NTS Sessions 1 through 4 at number 2, and then Tri Repete at number 1.
And I've got Sickly Sweet at number 10, then Amber, Choristus, Untilted, Elsec, Confield, Chiastic Slide, Tri Repete, XI at number 2, and NTS at number 1. Any closing thoughts on this chapter, this long chapter of the Outtaker journey?
That it was fun to do it, but I'm honestly like glad to, we've got the next little AE Live set, but then, you know, we get to move into Sign and Plus, which are albums that came out, you know, as we started this podcast. And because of that, I haven't, yeah, I haven't listened to them as much as I normally would listen to a new Outtaker, release. So I'm really excited to like move past this as much as I, absolutely love this era.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. I'm really, really, really looking forward to what's to come. But, I just can't deny that this is like, it's just incredible that this long into Outtaker's career, they like dropped this on us, like this just unbelievable masterwork that, I agree with listener Joe that like after some time has passed, people are going to remember this record and just be like, I can't believe that thing exists, that they did that. It's like,
it's a masterpiece. Especially, almost 30 years into, their career to do something. Who else has released an 8-hour record? I mean, with that Panasonic Records, Kesto is what, like 6 hours or something? I don't know of anyone else.
Unbelievably ambitious.
Well, what do you think about the NTS sessions? We're going to talk about the bonus track, Sinistral Sentinel. Hard to say. And your emails next week. So send us your thoughts, gauntcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode in 2 weeks, the second AE Live, or really kind of third AE Live set, AE Live 2016-2018. It's the one with the circle covers. We want your opinions and hot takes on those. GauntcastPod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram. Those are @GauntcastPod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.